Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. We are privileged each week to be blessed by the intelligence of a man with great acumen about what is going on in Asia and what it means for all of us. He is, of course, Gordon Chang. You find him starring at places like Fox News, but also writing with great effect at The Daily Beast and Forbes.com, World Affairs Journal, and elsewhere. We're always delighted to have him here, among other things, to talk about some of the insights that you can find in his best-selling books, The Coming Collapse of China and Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World. Gordon, it's good to have you. Welcome back.
No, thank you so much, Frank.
As we speak, President Trump is at the United Nations for a couple of days of diplomatic statecraft and derring do. Prominently featured in much of his conversations there, apparently, will be North Korea, which, since we last talked, has again sent a missile over the Japanese home islands, again signaling its indifference to UN sanctions, which it has again been subjected to. So give us an update, Gordon, on what has been developing in all of these areas and the implications, if any, of the General Assembly's meetings and conversations on their margins.
In anticipation of the UN General Assembly meeting, there were a number of administration officials on the talk show circuit this week. So, for instance, we had H.R. McMaster, the National Security Advisor, tell us that we're really out of time on diplomacy, and he's very specific on that. Also, UN Ambassador Nikki Haley, very much the same theme. And I think what the administration is trying to do is put pressure on the Chinas and Russias of the world to say that if they don't come on board and actually help us with these sanctions, that there will be military action on the part of the United States. I don't know if Moscow and Beijing believe them, but nonetheless, that's what the administration appears to be doing.
And McMaster, among other things, said very explicitly that there are military options. Do you see evidence of that?
When we talk about military options, everyone thinks about surgical strikes or more massive strikes on North Korea. But there's one military option we don't talk about, and that is something that I think we should actually do, and that is to board and inspect North Korean ships on their ways to, for instance, Iran. We know that the North Koreans get somewhere between $2 and $3 billion a year from the Iranians, much of it for missiles, also nuclear weapons technology. In the last set of UN sanctions, Resolution 2375, the United States did not get what it wanted, which was a right to board ships without the consent of the ship owners. Nonetheless, I think that we've got to do this to stop this weapons trade, but also we have the authority to do this. And paradoxically enough, the North Koreans have given us this authority, because at least three times last decade, they abrogated the Korean War armistice, which means if there's no agreement not to use force, we can sink those ships. If we can sink them, we can certainly board them. And so I believe that we can actually go ahead and do this. So I hope that the administration takes a more robust view. We take the view that the armistice still is in existence, but as a legal matter, Frank, that is untenable because one party to an agreement not to use force says it's no longer bound. Therefore, we should take the North Koreans at their word and start being a bit more coercive.
I couldn't agree more, Gordon. And one of the things that Jim Woolsey has been suggesting, as have others, is that these North Korean satellites over our country, at least with some regularity, could well be devices capable of unleashing an electromagnetic pulse attack against us. As long as we're boarding ships, it seems to me neutralizing those satellites ought to be a pretty high priority as well. You've written a piece at Forbes.com about India and Japan encircling China. One of the things I've been struck by is as these missiles are being launched now, two of them, I guess, over the Japanese home islands by the North Koreans, the trajectory those missiles are following would be pretty much what an attack on Japan might look like as well. Shouldn't the Japanese, and with our help as needed, be preventing those missiles from doing that?
The trajectories of those missiles make it clear that they're not going to hit the Japanese homeland, but nonetheless, these are extremely provocative. And the one thing that we have seen recently is that Kim Jong-un is becoming even more provocative in his actions, which means he's not being deterred by whatever we say or whatever we do. We need to take the initiative away from Kim, and one of the ways to do that is the next time that he decides to arc a missile over Japan is actually to take it down. We got to remember that ballistic missile tests are prohibited by the Security Council, but the Security Council has not talked about how to enforce this particular prohibition. We need to go about this. And Frank, if we want to remember about the consequences of this, all we have to do is think back to last decade about the dozen or so Security Council resolutions on Iraq, the Security Council refusing to provide any mechanism in terms of enforcement of them, and ending up with the Iraq War. So this is a critical issue that we faced last decade. It's an issue that we face now.
And it requires the cooperation of the Russians and the Chinese if there is to be a UN Security Council enforcement mechanism put into place. I must tell you, I'm not going to hold my breath on that, Gordon. But do talk about this idea of a sort of geostrategic arrangement that may be not only causing China concerns, but also an important counterweight to some of the things they're doing that are of concern to us, namely with the Japanese and the Indians, among others.
Shinzo Abe, the Japanese prime minister, was in India for 2 days. And what the prime minister was doing was announcing Japanese infrastructure projects in the northeastern part of that country. The reason why that's important is because the Chinese are threatening India's northeast. And so Japan was showing solidarity with Narendra Modi, his Indian counterpart. This is, I think, important because you have two extremely important countries banding together. They're both American friends. One of them is, in fact, an American treaty ally, Japan. And I think that a union of the world's most populous democracy, India, and its most powerful one, that's, of course, us, is an unbeatable combination, especially when we have the help of our friends like Japan. So I think China is really, you know, people say, oh, China is the owner of the 21st century. You know, there's not too much we can do about this. Well, that's not right, because we have countries that are extremely concerned about China. And indeed, Japan and India have much more effective China policies than we do. We have a lot of learning. We should go to school in Tokyo and in New Delhi about how to deal with the Chinese, because we're well behind the curve on that one, Frank.
We are indeed. Well, we find ourselves going to school with you each week, Gordon Chang. I'm very grateful for that. Let me ask you very quickly, Gordon. Gasoline prices are spiking in this country, in part because of these, hurricanes, of course, and the effect that they're having on refineries. The Chinese are in our energy sector, as well as, of course, the Saudis and Russians. Is that something we should be concerned about, Gordon, as we're looking at the possible interference from those quarters?
We don't want the Chinese in our economy at all, except if they're happy to buy real estate, apartments in New York. That's not a national security issue. But nonetheless, China involved in any other part of our economy is. The one thing that we can just sort of take a little bit of comfort in is that no country has ever cornered a commodity. And the Chinese are not going to be the first if they're going after oil or natural gas. But nonetheless, we need to have a thorough review, not just of individual Chinese acquisitions like Lattice Semiconductor, but really a review of the entire process where we look at Chinese investments into the United States. This Committee on Foreign Investment in the U.S., CFIUS, we need to turn it around in terms of China, where the presumption is not that an acquisition is permitted, but if it's a Chinese acquirer, that the acquisition is not permitted. And that's across all sectors, including energy, in my view.
What a bracing idea. Gordon Chang, we have to leave it at that. Thank you very much for your time. I would say that the Chinese have done a pretty good job of cornering the rare earth minerals commodity market, but that may be the exception that proves the rule otherwise. Gordon, thanks so much for your time. Come back to us again next week. I hope the rest of you will stick around when we talk with Frank Calzone about the latest attacks against American diplomatic personnel in Cuba and what we're going to do about it. That and more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.